You know, single ladies.
People that you were first associated with in this time period before the Wobbly Association, do you remember people like Kate Sadler and Anna Louise Strong?
Oh, yes. In fact, I told you about Anna Louise Strong. It seems to me the first time I met Anna Louise Strong was when Louise Bryant, and that's already, you've already taken that down. Well, Louise Bryant was on a lecture tour, and she came to Seattle, and I knew about it, so I phoned her, and she invited me to come over and see her. She said she won't have much time. She's expecting an interview, but to come and see her in between times. So I rushed over there, and I was hardly there 2 or 3 minutes when the bell rang, or the phone rang, and there was Anna Louise Strong coming up to give her an interview. Now, evidently, I had met Anna Louise Strong before, but she wasn't impressed, you know. So some people are not impressed with me, and some people are highly impressed, you know. It all depends on what the situation is, what the subject matter is, you know. But when she saw me, she stood there agape, you know. She couldn't understand what in heck I was doing with Anna Louise, with Louise Bryant, you know. So, of course, she found out, you know, that I'd known Louise Bryant, and she found out later that I'd known quite a few other famous people. And my impression was that she was a star hunter, you know, hunting important people and not interested in the rank and file. And then, of course, when my husband was arrested and she went to take down, to interview him, that was another feather in my cap, you know, because again I rose in her estimation. But she was really good to us. She helped us, you know. It was, I think you've got that story about when my husband was.
No, that's what we want. I want to build up to that, and then we'll do a whole separate thing on that.
Well, anyway, frankly, I don't know whether it was late. I don't think it was in late 1918, I think it was in late 1919s, and I should have a better memory than I have, but my memory is, you know, after all these years, you're interested in so many other things, I just don't have a retentive memory, not for dates. I never did in history. I was very poor in remembering dates in history.
Well, she wasn't involved, in other words, with this group of radical intellectuals.
No, she wasn't. She was a journalist, mm-hmm. You know, and she went after whoever was important to get their story and to write up the story, and she was quite a good what is the word?
Blank verse
poetry. And her stories came out very well, you know, in that form of writing.
Now, what about Kate Sadler? Was she involved with...
Kate, I didn't see there. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, I don't know if I ever met Kate Sadler. Mm-hmm. But I've known about Kate Sadler all my life. Mm-hmm. You know. And I just don't remember Kate Sadler. I should remember her. I'm sure I met her, mm-hmm. but I just don't remember her, and I don't think she was there very long. I think she was in and out of Seattle, and it was I think the trek was between New York and Seattle.
Now, how about Louise Alvaro? Was she in prison at that
time? I did not meet her, and I don't know. What on earth is that? His first name, O'Connor.
Harvey O'Connor,
yeah. I know Harvey wrote and asked me if I knew anything about Louise Olivero, isn't it?
I don't know how you pronounce
it. I think it's Olivereau. And there was a Mary Gallagher here in the city who knew her, and she was the only one who could give him some information, but not much of any satisfaction as to what happened to her, where she went to when she left Seattle.
Hey, girl.
Get some feel of, you know, who some of the people were.
There was a woman, a girl named Katie Farr, Now, Katie Farr was a singer of the IWW. She's the one that had a good, loud voice, and a good voice, and she would start the singing, and then all the Wobblies would join in with her, and they just worshipped her, and I think she was about 2 inches shorter than I am, if that's possible. She was a very little woman, but she was really quite a historic figure. She was a symbol of worship amongst the Wobblies, you know.
Now, when did you start going to the Wobbly Hall then?
Well, I started going there in the first year that I went to Seattle. And evidently through some of the group of friends that I met, you know, it was not difficult to find them. And how I went there, I don't know. I mean, well, the first occasion, I don't know. I cannot tell you. All I know is that I seem to have met the Wobblies very early from the time that I arrived in Seattle, and just met a great many of them.
Now, women were a real rarity, though, there, weren't they?
Without the women, I don't know what those men would have done. You know, the women were the kitchen slaves. They cooked and they baked and they made the coffee and they served all the men. They used to have a great long table across one end of the hall, and all the food was put on there, and the coffee urn, you know, was brewing. Time after time, they had to refill the coffee urn to make more coffee. Oh, no, the Wobblies had a lot of women. They really did, you know. But, you know, they were I can't think of the words, committee that would meet the men as they came in from lumber camps.
Oh,
and,
you know, like
a welcoming committee, you know.
About how many women would be involved?
Well, I think there were, the hall held, I'd say, about 75 people, and about at least a third of them were women.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, there were quite a few women. There were a lot of the men were married, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to come to the meetings and the socials, and as I say, the women always made the coffee and the food to eat. And it would have been utterly incredible not to have women there at any of their socials. And they used to have big picnics, you know. And there were lots of women who came to those picnics. In fact, I can't say whether there were a third or a half of them or even more than a half.
Now, were most of the women working class women, or were they
They were the wives or the mothers or the sisters of a lot of Wobblies. And the IWW was a very large section in Seattle. Seattle had the largest IWW next to the largest IWW in the country. Chicago had the largest, and Seattle had the next to the largest membership. Because it had not only the lumberjack, it had the electrical workers, it had, I don't remember, I remember 210 and 110 and 510, and there was 310 and 410, and I think 510 were the harvest workers. And they all used to eventually land in Seattle, and the first place they'd go is to the hall. Then they'd go to the skid row with, they probably joined their fellows in a saloon, or they'd go to the hall, not to the hall, to the offices, which was in a basement across the street from the hall. This is what I recall dimly, but I don't. Because I think that the hall was still going on, and only had one small room for an office, but this office down in the basement. Or a number of offices in which the various locals had their own little cubicle for an office.
Now,
that's where I met Emerson.
Now, when were you working for the Wobblies?
I don't remember. I don't think so. I don't think that I worked for the IWW in Seattle at all.
But you were working for other unions?
I was working for other unions or working in some capacity. I was I was not a very good worker, I will tell you that, frankly and bluntly. But I don't know, I just managed to survive anyway.
So your involvement with them was primarily in the socials?
In the socials, yeah, I used to go to their... at the socials, they always had speakers, mm-hmm. So I got quite an education that way, because I don't think I read any books. But I had political differences with them. Mm-hmm. The only time I worked for the IWW, which was a forgetfulness on my part, was in 1923. I worked in Butte, Montana for them. And in 1924, I worked in Chicago for them.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I was on my way on my way back east, and I worked for them.
Now, were there any people from the home colony that you were involved with?
Oh, yes. I wasn't involved with them. This intellectual group of friends of mine had friends at home colony, and I'd go along with them. And then as I became acquainted, I would go alone.
Mm-hmm.
But I would generally go there. I think I went there altogether about 6 or 8 times. Stayed for 2 or 3 days. I don't think I was ever there any longer than that. And I came to know a number of people.
Were they still basically anarchists at that point?
They were basically anarchists, and they weren't getting along very well together. They began quarreling over power, electric power. Instead of having one for the whole village, they each put in their own electric power. When they got mad at each other, they each put in their own electric power. So I had my first disillusion with anarchism. I figured that communally it might not work as I thought it should work,
At this time, was your social life then was really involved with these radicals and with the Wobblies? And did you relate much to other women?
Oh yes. What do you mean, other women?
Was it more to sort of intellectual men, and it was mainly to
It was really more to the intellectual group, because I was essentially intellectual. Mm-hmm. I was naive. I had many of my own ideas that I'd worked out, and I did not do the reading or the studying that I should have done. But the fact that I was interested in ideas and analyzed them, and it would even write them. I always wrote. You asked me, when did I start writing, or how many years did I write? I wrote my whole life, And I would write articles, and as I say, I would keep them for a while and tear them and throw them away. Or I write letters, And my letters were always very fascinating to people who received them, and I could never understand why. And this is quite true even today, I cannot understand why people find my letters fascinating. Because I read them and I think unless I get involved in a political issue, mm-hmm. And then I become critical of the way I express myself. If I type that, I'd do a much better job. But I get lazy. I like to write about 11 o'clock at night, and the typewriter would be a little mm-hmm. noisy.
Now, during before you were married, where were you living? Were you living with other people, or were you living with...
I had either my own room, or my own apartment, or living with other people. And then I married, And I don't remember whether I married in 1918 or 1918, and I tell you frankly, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been in 1918.
Well, let's see. Do you remember, were you married before the general strike?
Yes.
Oh,
My husband was in jail during that.
So by the time the general strike, you were already married?
Yes. And my husband, as I said, was in jail then.
Okay. So because that was February 1919, the general strike.
Well, then I must have married before. Because it wasn't long after our marriage that poor man got arrested.
Oh, okay. Well, then I want to ask you a few more things of some...
Now, I've given you the story on tape.
No, we didn't do that yet. We kept waiting to do that separately.
The time that he was arrested recording secretary for the Ipsos.
Yes, we didn't do that. We decided to keep that separate.
Oh, I see. I thought it got mixed up in there somehow. Oh.
But before you mentioned before, and I wanted to pick this up before we got to the marriage part, being involved in some kind of birth control thing there in Seattle.
Well, I wasn't actually involved. I was in favor of it. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I almost got arrested for a letter that a policeman read, but he was too stupid to understand what was... I wouldn't let him really read the letter because I kept talking the entire time he read the letter. I gave him this information already.
Yeah.
Now
that was related to the birth control issue.
But I could have been arrested and given quite a stiff sentence because the city was very anti-birth control, terribly. Well, it was viciously anti-birth control. And in fact, there was a statute on the books that people advocating, publicly advocating, or even or writing about birth control was subject to a prison sentence. So I knew that, you know. But I had the habit, as I say, of keeping letters and keeping many things that I wrote, and then I would tear them up or mail them away. I don't know.
But you weren't involved in any... There
was no... I wasn't, no. Mm-hmm. I if you're not a member of anything, you don't really become involved. Mm-hmm. But I attended meetings, and I was involved voluntarily. That is, I was in sympathy with it. I agreed with it. But I didn't go out and work at it. I've not been an activist. In other words... was I an activist? And I will frankly say no.
Okay. Now, so your marriage to Emerson was probably then 1918. Now, I wanted to ask you first, is this the same Emerson who did some organizing among the lumber workers in the South and was arrested there for, there was a big strike in 1912?
You know, that might be, but I don't know. How long ago was that?
That would have been 1912, I think. There was a
strike. That's possible.
Was his name?
Archer Lyle Emerson.
Oh, it's a different one. This
different
man's
name? And I know he was, and I know that, well, he has been in the East. In fact, his home is in, it was in Michigan. He was a grand cousin of Ralph Waldo Emerson. He belonged to that family.
Yeah, but you don't know if he was in the South at all, in the lumber...
Well, he was active in something, but I do not remember. He was active in some IWW... was he arrested? I know he was active in the IWW before I met him, but not for too many years. You know. And before then, he was a newspaper man. Now, nothing of that kind was mentioned in there. In the story that you read, his newspaper work was not mentioned. His vision became very poor, and he had to quit it. At least this is the story he told me. And he was not a member of the lumber workers, but of the electrical workers? I don't know. 310. He was a member of 310, and I don't remember what 310 was.
I could check that. Mm-hmm. Now, you met him...
And he was a secretary when I met him.
Of the
he
local?
He was a secretary of that local in Seattle.
Now, you met him at the Wobbly Hall then?
I met him, not at the hall. I remember going down to their offices in the basement, and I met him there, and I remember what he told me afterwards, that as soon as he saw me, he said, "Now that's the woman that I want to marry." And he didn't even know my name. He didn't know me. And how long he was in Seattle then, I don't remember. I don't know. I should certainly have had more of a history of his life than I did. But the only history I had was that he was a newspaper man for some time, and that due to health, he quit it, and went into manual labor, and joined the IWW and became a secretary, which is natural. I mean, with his education, it was natural that he would make a good secretary, at least an intelligent one, a capable one, and he was.
Now, how long did you know him then before you were married?
I don't think very long, perhaps a month, you know.
Do you remember anything about why you decided to marry?
I think that perhaps I wanted to get married. I think I needed stability, and I couldn't get it on my own, and I couldn't become stable, and I thought marriage would give me that stability that a young person needs, especially one who is both naive and sophisticated at the same time. It's really quite a conflict, you know, in one's life, you know, when you're half of one and half of the other.
What was your relationship like with him?
Well, it wasn't a good relationship because I think I married because he wanted me. He wanted to marry me, and he loved me, and I just don't think I loved him. But I was fond of him, and it was a bad relationship from the beginning because mostly because I was naive on the one hand and unstable, and much too sophisticated for him on the other. Do you want to hear the story now? It wasn't very long after we married. We got an apartment, and this friend, this lifelong friend that I had, and whom I just first met at that time, came to Seattle from San Francisco and Butte, Montana, not Butte, Salt Lake City. And her name was Alicia Rosenbaum then. I mean, it's quite a story about her. She was a wobbly. And this particular afternoon, Emerson and I came home, and there was Alicia in our apartment with two policemen. And they were waiting for us. And they had a warrant for Emerson's arrest. They actually had a warrant for his arrest. And Alicia got very arrogant, spoke nastily to them, and they thought, for good measure, they'll take her in too. And I was a little bit of a thing and frightened, but on the other hand, Emerson had already given me a high sign about the keys to his post office box, and I already knew about the post office box.
Now, this was for the wobblies,
yeah. So I thought, well, I better put it on a little stronger. You know, I mean, I was already frightened, but I wasn't too much frightened. I didn't like the idea of Emerson being arrested. I didn't like beginning married life in that manner. I didn't like beginning or ending any life in that manner. So anyway, they arrested him, and immediately I got the keys. He had them on a rafter. They had those beams. This was a real Western apartment. They had those wide beams across the top of the ceiling. There was a niche in one of them. I knew where he used to put the key. I don't know how the heck I got up there. As soon as the police left, about a few minutes later, I took the keys down, and then he called some of my friends and told them what happened, and they got a lawyer. Well, the only thing they could arrest him on was a book they found right on top in a bookcase, and it was the records of the Young People's Socialist League. And I was the recording secretary, not Emerson. But they arrested him. They thought they got something very wonderful on him, give him at least 2 years in jail. Not too much, but 2 years in jail. Well, anyway, when the case came up in court, the lawyer, the defense lawyer, told the judge, you know, the judge says, well, what's the case? What is it about? So the police, I don't remember what the police said, but there was a case of sedition. So the defense lawyer got up and told the judge that the sedition was on a young social group of which Emerson was not a member, and that he could not possibly have been the recording secretary, that this group was completely innocuous, that they were not seditious, and they were not demonstrating, they were just merely getting together and discussing and having this good old social time. So the judge got disgusted and threw the case out of court. And but the police weren't happy about that. And it wasn't more than, I don't know, a month afterwards that he was arrested on the Skid Row. He was downtown, and as he told me the story afterwards, each one walked along with him, one on each side of him, and they planted some nude pictures in his pocket, and there were pictures of me, and I couldn't figure how in heck he got them. I couldn't understand how the police got those pictures. So immediately I went home and I looked through my entire trunk, and I couldn't find the pictures, but the pictures were there. So I couldn't understand how in heck, what did they get? And it never occurred to me that they got the negatives. And God knows how many of those sets of pictures they made. They're all nude pictures taken by Marsden Hartley in Provincetown on the sand dunes over there. They were lovely pictures insofar as the sand dunes were concerned. I have nothing to say about myself. And then, as I also told you, they took out all kinds of junk. I call it junk because it was, you know, I wasn't doing anything. They took out poetry, they took out stories that I wrote, they took out even music compositions. I took a course in musical theory, and we had to compose something as a part of the lessons, you know, that we had. And the first thing I heard was from Emerson. I went to visit him. He said, "Guess who came to visit me?" He says, "The Musicians Union of America, the Writers Guild of America." And I don't know whether they all wanted to, you know, they all wanted to make him an honorary member. And you know, the stuff wasn't really good. But it was the fact that he was arrested on by ignorant policemen, you know, on that basis, and they recalled this about one time when there were writings on buildings and on trees and whatnot, signed by Omar Khayyam, you know. So here were the policemen hunting through the whole city for the seditious person to put him in jail. The newspaper guild especially, and the writers guild, they sure panned the policemen. They had a good story against them, but nevertheless, Emerson was held over for trial, so we had to get bail, and could only get it from his sister. Nobody in Seattle had bail, and he thought of his sister and brother-in-law, and we got it from them. And
now, what was he charged with that arrest?
Well, I don't know. You see, he was given 2 months or 3 months in jail, and this was just a prison camp outside of Seattle, so it wasn't a felony. You know, it was what is the other one called?
Misdemeanor
of some kind.
Why?
So you see, they couldn't arrest him on anything. They couldn't even arrest him on the basis of those pictures, because it was proven that, you know, his lawyer proves that the man didn't know anything about the pictures. He didn't know what was in the trunk. It was his wife's trunk, which the policeman ransacked, and they picked up everything that could be used against him. And they picked up mostly those pictures.
Now, why were they so intent to get him? Were they getting out for all the secretaries of the WAPO?
Yeah, because they wanted something on him, and they couldn't get anything on him. But the moment he married me, he was in trouble. Because I was a person of, an infamous, more or less of an infamous person in Seattle already. See, this was after the police had picked me up and taken me for questioning, and the fact that they knew me, see, and that I was connected with some anarchists and seditious characters. I had a certain amount of fame in that regard, but they had nothing on me, and they thought I was too little to be arrested for having nothing on me, you know, so they left me alone. But if they had, for instance, if that policeman had read that letter on abortion correctly, if he'd really got the gist of that letter, I could have been given years in jail. At least I think so. See, I don't know. I know they were very vicious against any abortion propaganda.
Now, that letter was addressed to someone that...
Yeah, it was written to an in-law of mine, mm-hmm. who was seeking information. It was on birth control. He was seeking information on birth control. And I already knew and had met Margaret Sanger, you know. And, of course, I knew something about birth control. And I wrote her about it. She told her what to do. Told her where to get it or how to get it. Or anyway, I mean, the instructions were all there, and I could have just simply have had a real prison jolt, not like the 30 days. That was just a day, you know.
So at this point, this must have been when they were going around really trying to break everything up under the sedition laws, when
yes,
they kept arresting
yeah.
him.
I think it was in 1919, mm-hmm. but you know, as I say, I'm just not sure.
Well, but you remember his being in jail during the general strike.
He was in jail during the general strike.
Was that with the second arrest or with
that
the
was,
first?
Oh, that was the second arrest. It was only at the second arrest that when he was brought up in court, he was given 2 or 3 months in the county workhouse, just outside the city, but in the county of Seattle, or whatever the county was called, I don't remember. And he was gone. He was in jail during the general strike.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that gives us a date then, because that was February 1919.
Yeah, and the strike was, mm-hmm. sure, yeah. Well, then it was in 1918 that we married, because we were, you know, all the story that I told you took some months to happen, mm-hmm. to occur. And they couldn't be compressed in 1 or 2 weeks.
No.
They were compressed in months, but I don't think in more than about 8 months at the very most.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you involved in the general strike then while he was in prison?
Well, I was not a member of anything, but I was certainly active in it, you know. That is, I was in the strike, mm-hmm. you know.
But you weren't active in the organizing or in the
No, I wasn't. No, I told you that I was never an activist.
But you weren't involved in any of the food distribution or anything?
No, I wasn't, okay. No.
All right, then he got out of jail sometime after the general strike.
He must have, yeah. Well, there isn't much more to tell. We didn't get along. We separated, and we came together and separated again. I don't, that's a part of my private history that I don't intend to tell. I was going to write a story on. I had a number. I had all of his letters,
mm-hmm.
and I was going to write a letter story. Mm-hmm. And it was just too difficult, mm-hmm. too impossible, too incredible. And I just tore up the letters, and that was the end of the story.
But so during this period, you kept separating, playing back together, separating?
Well, not during the strike, not during... It happened, actually, quite some time after he came out of jail. Because, you see, what happened was... you see... I'm forgetting. You know, this will all have to come out that I just said. Because, well, when he was out on bail, he said, "I cannot afford to get arrested. They will give me years." Now, how I could have forgotten that, I just don't know. But before we got the bail money, he was serving time. They kept him in jail, and they kept him in the workhouse, the county workhouse. And that was during the general strike. Mm. And then we got this money. We tried all over to get the money, and the bail was only $300, you know. And, you know, we had a heck of a time getting it. We got, in fact, I think that the bail was more than $300. One of his friends lent us money, and then we got, one of his friends lent us $300, and then we got the $300 from his sister, which we returned to my husband's friend, and then we ran away. We skipped bail. And this is the important part of that whole story. How I could have forgotten it, I don't know. Because when I began to realize that other things had happened before we split up, mm-hmm. I was forgetting the most important part of that prison sentence, the prison episode. So we went to, we changed our names. Everybody, they all do that. And in those days, the police weren't so spread out as they are now. And I don't know about the FBI, if it was functioning. And the CIA was certainly not in existence. And the case was entirely too small to require the services of the big federal policemen. So we went to Tacoma, and he got a job there. And we were there only a few months. And from there we went to LB, Washington. Now, LB is about 14 or 16 miles from Mount Rainier, either from the entrance or from the top of it, I don't remember. And we were there about either a year or pretty close to a year. We were there quite some time.
Now, were you both working there?
No, it was a village. It wasn't even a town. There must have been about 400 people in that whole village. But we got a place on some woman's farm. It wasn't a farm. She lived there, and she had quite a bit of land. And right by a stream. So we put up a tent and built an oven or whatever it is for cooking. And we could get our water. We were just only a few feet away from the stream. And while we were there, this is interesting. This was really one of the funny incidents in my life. This woman was a drug addict. And she was also an ex-madam of a whorehouse in Butte, Montana, or someplace like that. And of course, I was innocent of those things. I didn't know them, you know. And so my husband explained them to me. And of course, we never mentioned it, you know, and I was smart enough never to mention it to her. But she thought that while we were there, it'd be a good idea if we made some whiskey, moonshine. So we started out on a moonshine business. When the deputy sheriffs were there, my husband has to rush out in the woods and throw out a whole 10-gallon of mash, so as not to be discovered on her land. She'd be fined for it, you know. And of course, if she mentioned my husband's name, he'd be arrested. So we had to get rid of it. But we did make some whiskey over there, and I can't say we made a living out of it, but the living was very cheap. And we were there only the summer. The summer was beautiful, it was warm and so on. But when fall and winter came, it got too cold and too wet, you know. So we went into town, we rented a couple of rooms of what was once a hotel that had been discontinued, and he got a job as a lumberjack. You know, there might be that he was once a lumberjack, you know, and that story might be about him. It's just inconceivable to me.
I think so too.
It's inconceivable because I know he was in the IWW before then, before I met him, and that he also was in some trouble.
See, and that also makes more sense in terms of that's why they were so determined to get him.
Yes. Well, it's possible that they had something on him, and they didn't win before, and they want to try it again, you know. And really using me for bait was pretty horrible, you know. But anyway, you know, we were there, I think we were out of Seattle for about a year and a half. And let me see, there was some other incident. There was something in my mind. See, it was during this period that Anna Louise Strong became quite interested in us, you know. He was a big shot IWW, was arrested on false charges and then secondly on a frame-up, you know. And she helped us. As a matter of fact, she sent us mail. She said that she would be glad to take care of the mail for us and send it to us in different envelopes to our new name, you know. And, you know, she did that for the whole period that we were away from Seattle. But it seems that we came back to Seattle, but there was something else. I'm trying to think where we went from LB, because we were there for over a year. Isn't that funny? Just a blank, an absolute blank. It was in my mind a few moments ago.
So he was never caught, though, then?
He was never caught, no. It's funny, he was never caught. And when we came back to Seattle, we didn't get along. We were breaking up and going together again and breaking up. And then finally he left. He left Seattle. And I think it was in 23, either at the end of 22 or 23.
Now, did during this time period, when you went back to Seattle after living out in this place, did you work again then when you went back to Seattle?
I didn't stay there very long. Yes, I worked, you know. I had to work, you know. But I didn't stay there very long. I decided to go back east. And on the way over, I decided to go to Butte, Montana. This friend of mine, Alicia Rosenbaum, had married meantime, and she had gone to Butte with her husband. So I decided that I'd go there and got a room in a hotel or a housekeeping room in a hotel where they were staying. And I got a job with the IWW. And it was just up the street from where I lived. And I was there about 8 months. And from there, I went to Chicago and got a job with the IWW there, too.
Oh, so you went
I was already experienced by that time. See, it made a lot of difference.
So you went straight
I was able to take Butte. Shorthand and transcribe my shorthand notes and so on.
So you went straight from Butte to Chicago?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, that's where I was really going. And I stayed there about a year through 1923 anyway. They were really short periods because from there I went to New York. But that was, in a sense, the end of the highlights of my experience.
Well, I want to separately, next time maybe we can begin, I want to ask you about that time period in Chicago, because you said...
I don't remember it. It just seemed to me that it was on policy. Mm-hmm. But this was really political policy. The split was between the communists in the IWW and the anti-communists. Because the communists were really trying to take over the IWW. They tried to do that in Seattle, as a matter of fact.
Well, maybe we can go into it, see what you can remember. I'll do a little bit more. I'll look at some other notes I've got on that. Do you remember anything about the Centralia?
The what?
The shootout in Centralia and those trials.
No, I wasn't there. That was in 1916.
No, Centralia was 1919. The end of 1919.
Well, I was in Seattle. Saturnia was in 1919?
The
Armistice Day Parade. Well, I mean, there's nothing more that I can tell you than you know. It's been written, very fully written, you know. And it's all I know is what I've read. And also what I heard in Seattle. But I don't remember that I heard anything different than what I'd read, you know. That's why I can't tell you anything new about it.
That you weren't involved with the defense?
I wasn't involved with it, no. I was in Seattle.
What was your basic decision to go back east was after your separation, then you decided to go back?
Yeah. And, you know, the Finns had their own organization. They were Wobblies, too. And they were very nice. Whenever we had parties or when they had parties, they always helped us. You know, the women helped us, again, with the coffee and the coffee cake and the made delicious.